I invite you to turn to Revelation 6. We're looking at the opening of the seven sealed scroll. Jesus has already opened the first seal. And as you remember, this is one who, it tells us, will have riding on a white horse, and one that sits on that horse as a bone, a crown, and he went out to overcome and to overcome. And so there's a treaty compact made with Israel. This corresponds to Daniel's account in the last week of Daniel in the 490 years that he has there, the 70 weeks of Daniel. And so at the beginning of that treaty, he solidifies the agreement whereby they can build their temple and ensue their sacrifices. And of course, in the middle of that, it's going to cease. And that's what we're going to see here in verse 3. I'm going to read verse 3 to verse 8 together with you in Revelation chapter 6. When he, referring to Jesus, who is the Lamb who is worthy to open the scroll, the second seal, I heard the second living creature saying, "Come and see." Another horse, fiery red, went out, and it was granted to the one who sat on it to take peace from the earth, and that people shall kill one another, and there was given to him a great sword. And when he opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, "Come and see." For I looked, and behold, a black horse, and he who sat on it had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four living creatures saying, "A quart of wheat for a denarius, and 3 quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the oil or the wine." When he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature saying, "Come and see." So I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and the name of him who sat on it was Death, and Hades followed with him, and power was given to them over a fourth of the earth, to kill with sword and hunger and death by the beasts of the field. As you look at your outline, it's a very simple outline, we find that this second seal reveals an unparalleled hostility over the whole entire earth. When he opened the second seal. Now we have to keep in mind that Jesus is the one opening these seals. He is the one that is ensuing these judgments on the earth. Hopefully I'll come back to that thought at the end. So he's opening the second seal. Remember, he's taking back from the position that Satan had taken from man in what is called the tenant possession. He will be the one that will be given the authority and the right to execute God's judgments. He will be the one who has the right to rule and to reign. And he, as the kinsman redeemer, as the last Adam and the second man, takes the place then of man and brings back what should have been there from the beginning all the way through what we might call history of the human race. This one now is representative as a federal head, will take that position in place of man and fulfill the role that man should play at the beginning. Not as a redemptor, but rather in obedience to God and fulfilling the things of God and doing the will of God. And so he opened the second seal, and John's going to hear this second living creature. So all of the four cherubim that are described in chapter 4 each have a part in the four seals. So the first one, the first seal, one of the four cherubs participate in that. Now another of those four now participates in the second one. And he reiterates in an utterance to John to come and see. And of course, he's going to look and he's going to see a fiery red horse. And it's going out, And it was granted to that one who sits on that horse to take peace, which is from the first seal, from the earth. So it's global. And that people should kill one another, and there was given to him a great sword. Now, some people have supposed that this rider on the fiery horse is the Antichrist, or the false prophet. None of those are in play here. Certainly the Antichrist was in play in the first seal. I'll give a time reference at the end. I'm not going to give the time reference now. But nonetheless, when this second seal breaks out, peace is taken from the earth. That's an important part. In line with the interpretation of the rest of the seals, it seems best then to take the rider as a personification of war or a lust for war. A great sword that's depicted here is a symbol of a war of destruction of all kinds. Notice that the rider's great sword, it's an instrumentality of various things that are going to take place. So it's not just, when we consider war, war has different facets to it. There is the planning of war, the ingenuity of war, the deception of war. There is the weaponry of war. There is propaganda of war. There are various type of things that work into various things that we would call war or strategies of war. But there's also a condition of the time. The condition of the time, which is going to be unfolded for us, is horrific. Because it affects men at their core and how they respond one to another. Now notice that the writer is not doing the killing. He's simply taking peace from the earth, in which men are the cause of the slaughter. They will butcher and they will murder each other. The Greek word for kill here is not the normal word for death in battle, but rather it's a word that means that of violent killing of all kinds. So in this prophecy of the future, from the Mount of Olives perspective that Jesus gives in correspondence to what's going on here in the opening of these seals, Matthew chapter 24, Jesus told his disciples that wars would characterize the present age, but he also emphasized that they would not necessarily be the sign of the end. He said in verse 6 of chapter 24, Matthew, "Ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet." Now, he's going to give an explanation when the end is going to come later, but that is not at this moment. So there have been a few years in the history of mankind when the earth has been free of war. We certainly haven't been brought up in that era. We have Cold War. We have had, even after World War II, after World War I, actually, World War II was just an aftermath of World War I. And then you have, obviously, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Gulf War, the Iraqi War. War, 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 war. Where's wars in different places of the world, even now? So war is not, maybe in our minds, unusual. But at this scope, it will be unusual. Its dimensions will carry across the world. Now, Hitler had a certain European conquest, and even in Africa, but he didn't come into America. And so we have to realize that this is going to reach globally. the effect of what is taking place here. And so this is something that is unmeasurable in scope of what has happened in any type of a historical reference. The restraint against evil is diminishing. The restraint against evil is diminishing. Remember, Jesus is eventually going to say, because lawlessness is going to increase, the hearts of many will grow cold. Peace will be displaced by strife. Love will be displaced by hate. Violence will become rampant throughout the earth. I mean, I would not have believed what had taken place last year when streets in Seattle and LA and other places, Minnesota, just total anarchy. And yet you see the cameras viewing, police are standing there, they're helpless. It's not because they don't want to do something, they're told to stand down. And merchandise is taken. I heard recently, as I was listening to ACLJ, that these are not... they're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. And these people, when they go... if there's any judicial process that's taking place for anybody that stole anything, they're set free. No crimes against them, and no bail. And if there is anything done, the highest they get is a misdemeanor. Now, I would never thought I would ever see that. You might think that would happen maybe in a small town or that particular area, but we're talking about this happened in various places in the United States of America. This is something that, as far as I, in my lifetime, I've never seen before. Now, we've had protests, and sometimes they get a little violent, things like that. They're kind of pocketed. But now, because of the internet and everything else that goes on, everybody knows what's going on, and so there's an organized strategy to cause chaos. This is going to be on a worldwide scale. So it's not pocketed. The scripture indicate that the Antichrist will be the master maneuver in the conspiracy, working through people to accomplish the delegated power or the authority that's been given him through flattery and deceit. He will promise peace, but he's not going to be able to stabilize it. The longing for peace will be superseded by warring mood. Crime and violence will run rampant through the earth. And so conquest and war will bring apart this phase of the judgment of God. And you have to look at seals 2 to 4 together. They're not separate. They are engaging separate things to be identified. But as you'll see at the end, in the fourth seal, they're all lumped together in the aftermath as a result. And so, the Prince of Peace, the one that really will stabilize things, will be the Lord Jesus Christ. When he comes back, that Prince of Peace. The Bible tells us in Ephesians chapter 2 for the believer, says this phrase, he is your peace. Now, it doesn't make any difference what's going on in the world. He is your peace. You have been reconciled. You are at enmity with God. You are warring against God, but no longer. Now, at this phase of stage, men's hearts, as they grow cold, are warring against God, ultimately. And their allegiance will be, eventually, to the one that's going to demand worship in place of God. It's very possible that that's taking place at this juncture in the stage of the second seal. I'll come back a little bit on that at the end. Well, but you have to realize that the kingdom of men will fall, and we cannot be caught up in the stir of what the world is doing. We have to be in the know. We have to be able to be light bearers in the midst of darkness. And contrary to the teaching of some, the seal judgments of the tribulation do not reflect the wrath of man or the wrath of Satan. They can only express God's wrath poured out on the world. Now, if God pulls back restraint at any level, men are left to themselves. And I guarantee you, Satan, who has been given certain parameters, will do what he can to cause all sorts of evil. Remember, he is a dragon, he's a liar, he's a thief, he's a murderer. He steals and destroys. He's a master deceiver. He does everything he can to accomplish his goals. Now, historically, when you look at the past, God has used the instrument. In fact, if you look at, I'm trying to remember, I think it's Ezekiel chapter 19 as a case. God gave over the southern kingdom to other nations for destruction. Chiefly, Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar had already destroyed other nations. Nations have joined in with him because obviously he's taken control now. They are a part of his army. And the Bible says the reason why that has happened, why God gave them over, is because of the rebellion to him. So God has used the Assyrian army for the northern kingdom as an instrument. And so he used foreign oppressors to destroy them and take them into captivity. Did the same for the southern kingdom. Historically, as you read through Ezekiel, and also Isaiah does the same thing, they go to Tyre, they go to Egypt, they talk about various other nations, how they've been taken over. And so we have to realize that God historically has used other nations as an instrument for carrying out his judgment. And that's what you're finding here, including turning the hearts of men loose. If God removes, now, restraint. Eventually, when we see in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, there is going to be the removing of restraint. One is a neuter and the other one's masculine. In the masculine form, that which is restraining will cease to do so. I personally think that is reference to the church. Some think it might be government. Well, the government doesn't do much, and if lawless is going to break loose, if judges are not going to do their jobs when they're supposed to do their jobs, I'm not talking about all judges. I'm talking about those that are not doing their job, or particular officials that are not doing their job, and they let anarchy take place to play into a scheme, then what are you supposed to do? Anarchy is breaking loose. If you try to defend yourselves, which some have, you go to jail. Not the looters. It's the one that defends this place that may have punishment. Now, that doesn't sound right. And it isn't right. And so we kind of have a little picture of what's going on right now. Blow it up to a greater magnitude. But this one is going to be catastrophic, where men and women and children are going to die. All over the world. It was God the Father, that held the seven sealed scroll in chapter 5, verse 1 on the throne. And until the Lamb, who is declared to be worthy, takes that scroll in verse 7, and he begins to open its seals. You see that here in verse 1. You see it in verse 3, verse 5, verse 7, verse 9, verse 12, chapter 8, verse 1. Jesus is unleashing this. He's using the instrumentalities that he wants in the midst of the judgment. This is the judgment of God. Even deceit, false peace, is a sign of his judgment. I already gave some examples on that when I was talking about that first seal. Jesus himself prophesied of this future time. He stated in Matthew chapter 24, verse 6 and 7, you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. Now, I can pull up my phone and I can get instant information. I've had information this week that shows me about a war that's brewing right now over there towards Ukraine. You have over 94,000 Roman military building up, ready to go. China, they've been sending out planes and bombers, fighter jets, even war vessels in the area of Taiwan. Recently, they just sent one, a submarine surface from Chinese submarine recently surfaced in the Japanese waters. And they're always talking about, that's ours. It's not yours, it's ours. You have rumors of wars, and you have people that are actually fighting in certain areas of the world. And some are presupposing that there may be a war by Russia, at least coming into Ukraine. We'll find out. But there's this buildup. There's always this tension that's there. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation will rise up against nation, kingdom against kingdom. By the way, we're not in the second seal right now. Don't tell me, don't say I just said that. We've always had that. But this is going to be at a heightened level. And not only that, this peace is going to be across the world. We haven't had this world across the entire globe. And of course, it's not going to hold. And we haven't had the contract that's solidifying with that treaty for Israel to build their temple on the Mount Moriah location and to have their sacrifices. So please remember, that's the starting point. That is the starting point. So we're not there yet. So don't be deceived. Note at the end of chapter 6, verse 5, in regards to that second seal, the writer was given that great sword. And that sword is the Greek word makaria. It refers to, and this is important, it refers to a short type of an instrument. It's a stabbing, close combat sword carried in battle. It's not the longer sword. It's also a weapon that's used for assassinations. And so the vision is depicted in this great sword, referring to the amount of death that's going to take place. That's the idea of the magnification of the sword, not its length, but its capability. Describes the extent of all that war and the aftermath of what's taking place in view of that. Antichrist, false peace, is going to dissolve, maelstrom or battle, assassinations, rebellion, revolt, massacre worldwide. Secondly, the third seal is a worldwide food shortage. You can call it a famine. That would be correct. He opened the third seal, and I heard the third living creature saying, come and see. He looked, and behold, a black horse. And he was sat on it, and had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four living creatures, a quart of wheat for a denarius, three quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the oil or the wine. So the third living being, probably is a more accurate way of saying that, but it's one of the cherub that already been described in chapter 4 from the presence of God, issue the statement in a loud voice, come and see, referring to John to look. So this third horse that John sees is a black one. It's not the first time you see black in regards to a black horse. Zechariah refers to black horse in chapter 6, verse 2 and verse 6 of chapter 6 of Zechariah. Black is the color that represents, in this case, evil, suffering, hunger. The writer has in his hands an unusual instrument, scales, and the scales are used for weighing. These are scales of a merchant that they would use. The writer seems to be a personification of famine all across the world. And notice that the black horse follows the red. He's following the red. So this is the aftermath of the war. The wars and the hostilities that are taking place all through history. The aftermath of war has been inflation and famine. You're going to see it here, but on a global scale, there will be class warfare, the have-nots fighting against the haves. Governments will have to make and enforce strict measurements or the lack of it. It will not be an exaggeration to say that there will be multitudes of starving people across the world, including the United States of America. The scales may be, if America is still standing, the scales may symbolize the careful weighing out of food and possibly general rationing because of scarcity and famine. There was rationing in World War II. In the Great Depression, rationing. I remember living in California long lines to get gas in the oil crisis. I don't know what it was like here. I was in California. Paul was there too. I don't know what your lines looked like here. But in California, they got a lot of people and lines get longer generally than smaller areas. And so does their prices. You hope your car doesn't run out of gas before you get to that pump. And so instead of prosperity, a person will have to give. Now watch this. A denarius was in the common labor market was a full day's wage. One, the quart that he uses here is surmounted for equal to one rationing of food for one person. It's going to cost a whole day's wage. So whatever that average is today, that's what it's going to cost to feed one person on the better type of a meal, the more nutritional meal. This is symbolic by the use of wheat. The denarius was a silver coin, similar in size and weight of a Greek drachma. And so it's the average wage of a soldier or a labor of time. So when this famine takes place, the prices of inflation will be about 12 times the normal price. So whatever we might be complaining about now in regards to the increase of price, magnify that 12 times over. A person who has a family to support will have to buy the cheapest food. In their economy, the barley was the cheapest, less nutritional food, and it was given to the more like slaves. And so in order to feed a small family to do that, because you can't have the higher nutritional type end foods, you have to buy the cheaper kinds of foods, less nutritional foods to feed, and one day's wage to feed an entire small family. And that wouldn't be the Steenies family. It would be a small family of maybe 2 to 3 people. Small family. For one day. A whole day's wage. So your money's not, you're not going to use your money for anything else because you don't have no more money. You're going to save it because you're going to want to survive during that period. That's kind of like man's what's going to do. Survive. Well, that's going to cause hostilities. It's going to cause, you have that, I don't have that, I'm going after you because you have it and I want that. Survival of the fittest. Hurt not the oil and the wine seems to mean that luxuries might be available because he's using marketable things at their time. So you have to put the equation of what that would be today. Oil and wine would be more of a luxury thing available, especially in a sequence like this where there's famine. when there's scarcity of food, that would be looked at as a luxury more for the rich and the powerful. Not that it wasn't available under normal circumstances to individuals, but under crisis, they were not available to those people. So hurt, damage of spoil, there will be injustice, and the rich and the powerful will take advantage of the poor. The oil and the wine was used in preparation of bread. Wine was considered necessary in the cooking and purifying of the water. So suddenly, it will become a luxury, and it will be carefully protected. Starvation is already spreading throughout the world today. Governments are not able to control that. The coming world dictator, the Antichrist, will not be able to deal with it either. Hence, the buying and the selling will be controlled by him. And without taking that mark of the beast. Now you might say, well, wait a minute, isn't that later? No. Some people look at these seals, oh, that's happening. Boom. That's gone. Boom. The second seal. Boom. It's gone. Boom. There's the third seal. Boom. You have to realize that these are linked together after this period. Pieces taken away. And what I'm going to describe at the end here may shock you, and I hope it does. Because it's intended to shock us. You cannot read this book without being floored. With great awe. With your mouth open. Look, even if you're there or not, to know that the human race will go through this ought to be a jaw-dropper. So the fourth seal talks about global spread of death. Global spread of death. When Christ opens his fourth seal, the fourth living creature proclaims, come and see. So I looked, and behold, a pale horse. And the name of him who sat on it was Death. The name who sat on the pale horse was Death. And Hades followed with him. And power or authority was given to them over the fourth of the earth to kill with the sword. That's seal two. With hunger, that's seal three. With death, that's seal four. By the way, which is natural when you have catastrophic of that, you have beasts eating flesh of men. Just like you have fowl of air picking on the bones and the flesh. You see that out in the street. You're going to see it here. In fact, when you get to chapter 19, when Jesus comes back, it describes that vividly like that. That's what the birds, the fowl of the air, are doing, picking off the flesh of men that have died in the sea of the battle. And so when Christ opens the fourth seal, this fourth seal and the direction of this cherub is to come and look. Look at this, John. We have now all four of the cherub have participated in the announcement in correspondence with Jesus opening each a particular seal for them to respond back to John. Now this word pale describes the horse. It's the Greek word chloros. And obviously in our English language we get the word Clorox from it and chlorophyll. It portrays a pale, a shen green parlor characteristic of the decomposing of a corpse. The writer has the name Death, Thanatos, and then describes what follows death, Hades. Now, some of your translations have hell. That is a totally bad translation. Sorry. It's the Greek, it's not the word Gehenna, which is the typical word for hell, corresponding to eternal lake of fire. Hades, which is the Greek word, Hades, is the equivalent in the Greek to the Hebrew word Sheol, realm of the dead. That is not hell. Hell is the eternal lake of fire. Hellfire. So death may have the idea of taking the body, and death takes the soul. Now, there was a little dissertation I was going to deal with this on, but I stopped in the midst of it. It was horrifying, actually, but I stopped. I put that in my notes for a future time. The words in the latter part of verse 8, note the word power or authority. It's a Greek word, exousia. In other words, the root of this word means the right to operate. So there's permission given to him. There's a right to act here. Again, given from Christ. It says it was given to him, doesn't it? Power was given to them, which is death and Hades. So we have to look at this then, the words here, that power was given to them, referring to death and Hades. He had authority, extends from the sovereignty of God to allow this is what is taking place. So people that say God's all loving, how could he send someone to hell? Let me tell you something. He does things before people go to hell because they rebel against him. He has every right to do that, as we saw this in chapter 4. He is the creator of all things. He made things for himself. And when men respond and refuse, are disdained of God, God gives them over what they want. Part of that giving over is the restraint that he had given before. And he allows the ensuing of their own evil. And the evil, the spiritual ness that's around them that God even held off for a time, but now lets that go loose. Again, with parameters. By the way, if he didn't put the parameter on this, it would be worse than what it is. But he said no farther. He said, you can only kill 25% of the world here at this moment. You're only going to kill 25%. Well, that's a lot of people. I mean, you have 7.9 billion people today in 2021 across the world. That would equal to 1.975 million people today. Men, women, and children devastated by these judgments. Now, here's the observation. This is how I want to close this. Because there's a lot of questions. I've had a lot of questions about some things. So let me just try to tie some things together, and maybe it's going to unravel some things in your head. I don't know. In the first seal, question mark, that's the first 3.5 years right there. When peace is taken away corresponds to other passages in Scripture, Daniel, for example, in chapter 9, verse 27, and also in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, in regards to the falling away, when Satan comes in to raise himself up, and he now goes after Israel, hell is breaking loose, literally, on the earth. Secondly, the second to the seventh seals are the second half of the tribulation, called the Great Tribulation. Now, Walward, who's probably one of the premier experts on the pre-tribulational view, who studied eschatology for 50 years, previous president of Dallas Theological Seminary, has done many, many works on this, written books and so on, as well as Dr. Thornton, in his contribution in the commentary of Revelation on the complete library, multi-volume work in volume 10, corresponds to the same understanding to this. So we're not talking about amateurs. And there's others we can talk about, but just bringing these in view. Concur that this is the second half of the tribulation. I don't know about you, but I never looked at it that way sometime in the past. And I have studied eschatology probably for a good, 30 years, I would say, for sure, and probably more. And I've done different works on it. And it always advances my knowledge and understanding of it, but it never ceases. And probably more so in the last 5 years, more concentrated effort on the works with various aspects of it. And it seems very likely that is true. Third, Jesus said that the aftermaths seen in the seals that he relates in parallel to John in the same sequence of these seal judgments, 2 to 4, are a part of the beginning of sorrows that he mentions in Matthew chapter 24, verse 8, or more literally, the Greek is birth pains. Now, once birth pains begin, they don't stop. These are not the false, what do they call that? Something Hicks. Where's my wife? Maxton Hicks. What's the guy's name? Braxton Hicks. I forgot the guy's first name. Braxton Hicks. Isn't that the guy that came up with this? Braxton Hicks? Don't know. Good story, though. But the Braxton Hicks, this is the real thing. And so the idea, though, and I shared this in our Thursday Bible study. You know, I know people, they may go through 36 to 48 hours of their pregnancy in the beginning of their real birth pains. I know other women that if they don't get to the hospital right now, they'll have the baby where they are. They will have the baby in a matter of minutes. Melanie's sister Angela had her baby in the bathtub. It was her first child. She didn't know this was going to happen. It was her first experience. And she called out to her husband, "The baby's coming!" Literally! And by the time the ambulance, the EMT people got there, they just got there in time just to cut the cord and to seal it and then transport the baby. I knew a lady, the same thing. She could drop the baby in an elevator just like that. She knew she had to get there now. So when you consider these birth pains, please don't consider this, well, this is going to be short. No, what he's describing here, we're talking about birth pains that are happening very quick, and they're going on very quickly. And I'm telling you, because these things are not stopping, they're going to be compounded by other things that are come after it. So the four seals aren't stopping. They're continuing, compounded by other things that are taking place, going on after the seventh seal. The other thing is this. The seven-year tribulation, so-called, is limited in time. Why? Jesus said unless these days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the sake of the elect, and I take the context from chapter 21 all the way to chapter 5, ensuing what the context of elect is, it's the remnant of Israel, those days will be shortened. Because he's coming back to redeem the nation, the people of Israel. Fourthly, and this is the last thing, Dr. Reynolds Showers. He's a graduate of Wheaton College. He did his graduate work at Dallas Theological Seminary, has a doctorate from Grace Theological Seminary. He has been on staff with Friends of Israel. He is a regular contributor to Israel My Glory. He has been on the faculty of Lancaster School of the Bible, Moody Bible Institute, Philadelphia College of the Bible. He's not an amateur, written many works on this. He did a work on what's called the pre-wrath rapture view. And it's a critique on that. He's a pre-tribulationist. If you have a lot of questions on this, especially on the day of the Lord, he does one particular chapter on that. He does a great job. You should read it. Because it helps you to understand certain things. Now, when we consider the pre-wrath, when you consider the pre-wrath position, Robert Van Camp, back in 1990, he's really the founder of that position. But It wasn't until Marvin Rosenthal, who used to be the editor of Israel My Glory, preached Revelational View, could not sign that position or that doctrinal statement any longer, because as he began to study the scriptures more and more, and he wrote articles every week in regards to the pre-tribulational view, so he was not a dummy in that field, he could not see that occurring. And develop, and this is the popular view of the pre-wrath view. In his view, that view comes not just in the after the middle point of the seven-year period, it comes in about halfway in the last 3.5 years that he thinks the church is raptured up. Now, I don't go that direction. I don't think that's the case. But let me just say this. You can be pre-wrath without going that far. You can be pre-wrath all the way to seal one. And then all of a sudden, you could say, the wrath of God comes on verse 3. I don't, because there's that argument in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 that could be used for that. Now, he deals with that. I don't think so, because the reason for that, there's a lot of reasons for it, but one big reason is, who's unsealing these seals? Jesus Christ is. He's the one that allows these judgments to take place, beginning from the first and ongoing. And I think there are particular sequences of language that seem to depict. Now, by the way, don't trap me in this. I'm not in a box. I'm not saying that pre-tribulation or I die. I have this little cartoon character. The dad of the home is sitting in a chair. He's got chains on him. He's buckled down, bolted to the ground. The pastor's coming to the front door. His wife opens the door. And he says, I'm post-trib no matter what. So if the pre-trib comes first, I'm staying behind because my argument has to be true. So don't put me in a box. I'm not in the box. I got room to move here because God doesn't tell us exactly. But you better be ready. You better be ready, because what's coming down the pike, even before this happens, is going to be bad enough. This is going to be horrific, unimaginable. Father, we pray that these things have been given to us so that we would know. We would know at least what's coming down the pike.